November the 12th, VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Dan Novak, and Katie Weaver. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, China's Commerce Ministry has told families to keep a store of daily necessities in case of emergencies. COVID-19 outbreaks and unusually heavy rains caused an increase in vegetable prices, which has raised concerns about supply shortages. Local media recently published lists of goods to store at home, including hard breads and instant noodles, vitamins, radios, and flashlights. Some Chinese citizens placed comments on social media that expressed fears of food shortages. State media tried to ease those fears and further explain the ministry's statement. The Economic Daily newspaper told people not to have too much of an overactive imagination. The newspaper added that the purpose of the order was to make sure citizens were not surprised if there was a lockdown in their area. The People's Daily said the ministry makes such statements every year. The ministry made a similar announcement earlier this year because of natural disasters, the increase in vegetable prices, and recent COVID-19 cases. The ministry statement this week urged local officials to do a good job in ensuring food supplies and fixed prices. The statement also urged officials to give early warnings of any supply problems. The government usually makes extra efforts to increase fresh vegetable and pork supplies before the Lunar New Year, China's most important holiday. The Lunar New Year date in 2022 falls in early February. But this year, those efforts have become more urgent after extreme weather in early October destroyed crops in Shandong, the country's biggest vegetable-growing area. Outbreaks of COVID-19 cases, stretching from the northwest to the northeast of the country, also threaten food supplies. Prices have eased in recent days, but economists expect a major increase in consumer price inflation for October compared to last year. The pandemic has caused an increased concern about food security. The government has written a food security law and is planning new efforts to stop food waste. The Commerce Ministry said local officials should buy vegetables that can be stored for long periods of time and strengthen emergency food distribution systems. Information about prices and supply and demand of goods should be released in a timely manner to ease people's expectations, it added. State television reported recently that China also plans to release vegetable reserves at an appropriate time to deal with rising prices. It is not clear which vegetables China holds in reserves and how big those reserves are. The report added that the state planning body has called for the timely replanting of vegetables and urged local governments to support fast-growing produce.
Thank you. A United States travel ban on foreign visitors from many countries was lifted on Monday. The action permitted many international travelers to take passenger flights to America for the first time since the COVID-19 health crisis began. Travelers must show they are fully vaccinated before they can get on a plane. They are also required to show a negative COVID-19 test taken within 72 hours of travel. Children under 18 do not need to be vaccinated, but are required to take a COVID-19 test. Children younger than 2 years do not need to take a test. The administration of former President Donald Trump first placed COVID-19-related restrictions on air travelers from China in January 2020. These were later extended to 33 countries, including many in Europe. Americans have been permitted to travel to Europe for months. European governments had been pushing the U.S. to change its policies. The U.S. had also restricted entry through land borders from Mexico and Canada to only essential travel. Beginning Monday, anyone can enter if they show proof that they have been vaccinated. Acceptable vaccines are those approved for emergency use by the World Health Organization. These include injections from Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, and China's Sinovac. Russia's Sputnik V vaccine has not been approved by the WHO and is not acceptable. There will be exceptions to the vaccine requirement for people from countries where fewer than 10% of the population has been vaccinated. Travelers from those nations will need special permission from the U.S. government to enter. Airline companies will be responsible for enforcing the vaccine requirements and could face government fines if they do not follow the rules. Alice Keene told Reuters news agency she was finally getting to travel from London to Miami to see her sister. She said it was really, really exciting. I was meant to go just before COVID happened, and obviously it's been delayed this long, so it's really exciting to finally be able to go, she said. Virgin Atlantic chief Shai Weiss told Reuters that the British Airlines planes were full. He said business was expected to remain strong in coming weeks into the holiday season. Delta Airlines chief executive Ed Bastian warned travelers to expect long lines. But he promised the company would aim to reduce wait times and get things sorted out. Bindia Patel spoke to Reuters at London's Heathrow Airport. I think we might just start crying, she said. Patel explained that she was going to see her one-year-old nephew in New York for the first time. Mexico's Ciudad Juarez is just across the border from El Paso, Texas. In that city, a line of about 20 people formed early Monday to enter the U.S., Reuters reported. Some members of the group had not seen family members on the other side since March 2020. We thought they were going to tell us again that they had decided not to open it, said Lorena Hernandez. She was reunited with her grown-up daughter in El Paso. I'm Brian Lynn.
Hundreds of little robots are rolling around colleges and cities in the United States, Britain, and elsewhere. The robots, about 50 centimeters tall, are bringing food like pizza to hungry students. The robots were being tested in limited numbers before the pandemic started. But pandemic-related worker shortages and a desire for contactless delivery have expanded their use. We saw demand for robot usage just go through the ceiling, said Alistair Westgarth. He is the head of Starship Technologies, whose robots recently made their 2 millionth delivery. I think demand was always there, but it was brought forward by the pandemic effect. Starship has deployed more than 1,000 robots, up from just 250 in 2019. Hundreds more will be sent out soon. They are delivering food at 20 U.S. colleges, and 25 more will be added soon. They are also operating in Milton Keynes, England, Modesto, California, and the company's hometown of Tallinn, Estonia. The robots use cameras, sensors, and GPS to move around and even cross streets on their own at the speed of 8 kilometers per hour. Operators keep watch on several robots at a time, but they say they rarely need to stop or move them around a barrier. When a robot arrives, people enter a code from their phones to open the robot and get their food. There are some limitations for now. The robots have to be recharged regularly. They are slow and cannot travel far. They will not leave food at the door. And big cities like New York and Beijing are not welcoming them. Data company NPD found that U.S. food delivery orders increased 66% for the year ending in June. And delivery demand could remain high even after the pandemic because people have gotten used to the service. I'm Dan Novak.
Lee Reich is an expert on gardening who writes about the subject for the Associated Press. Recently, he wrote a story about a plant that a gardening friend could not identify, even though the plant is common. The plant has green leaves and large yellow flowers. It appeared in Reich's friend's garden, although he had not planted it. The area did not get a lot of sunlight. Reich identified the growth as soon as he saw it. Jewelweed. His friend was surprised. He thought he knew what jewelweed looked like. In fact, he had an area in his garden filled with the plants. But those were bright orange. It turns out that jewelweed comes in a lot of colors. Orange is most common in the United States. But jewelweed flowers can be yellow, pink, and even brown. The fruit of the jewelweed explodes at the lightest touch. Seeds fly out in all directions. That quality is why Touch Me Not became the common name for jewelweed. Scientifically, the plants are known as impatiens. Impatiens campensis is the name of the orange touch-me-not. The jewel weed with the yellow flowers is Impatiens pallida. And there are 1,000 other kinds of jewel weed. All are famous for their ability to produce bright, colorful flowers, even when growing in shade. The flowers appeal to bees, hummingbirds, and other pollinators. Reich says jewel weed's impatient method of seed spread might be a good quality if you want a plant that spreads and returns every year. Of course, a plant that is too good at that could take over more space than you expect or want it to. Anything with weed in its name might seem like a bad addition to your garden, Reich notes. But he says some jewel weed versions are pretty enough to have been offered by dealers in native plants. Jewel weed is not just another pretty flower, however. The U.S. Forest Service website notes that the plant has a long history in Native American medicine. Jewel weed sap, or fluid, can be used directly on the body to ease pain and itching from many conditions, including poison ivy rash. The sap has also been shown to have antifungal properties and can be used to treat athlete's foot. I'm Katie Weaver.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. By the summer of 1862, the American Civil War had been going on for more than a year. The Union had won some battles. The Confederacy had won others. But neither side was in a position to win the war. President Abraham Lincoln needed a major victory. He was losing the support of both politicians and the public. A major victory would not only help him that way, it would also make it easier for him to make an important announcement. For a number of months, he had been planning an announcement about the black people held as slaves in the South. Today, Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe tell about Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation.
At the end of August 1862, Confederate troops, under the command of Robert E. Lee, defeated the main Union army at Manassas, Virginia. The battlefield was less than 50 kilometers from Washington. The year before, Confederate troops had sent the Union army fleeing from that same battlefield. Now, they had done it again. With this latest victory, General Lee decided on a major move. He would carry the war into the northern states. Lee took his army of 60,000 men across the Potomac River into Maryland. He ordered some of his men to capture the Union position at Harper's Ferry. He moved the others to Sharpsburg, a town on the Potomac River. He put his men into position along Antietam Creek, just outside of town. His lines extended almost 3 kilometers. There, at Antietam, he would make his stand. He was still close enough to Virginia to withdraw if the Union force following him proved too strong.
The Union force arrived in the middle of September. it did not attack immediately. It spent one full day getting into position along Antietam Creek, across from the Confederate Army. It attacked the following day at sunrise. The Union General George McClellan planned to attack all along the Confederate line at the same time, but this did not happen. First, Union troops attacked one end of the line, which extended into a field full of tall corn plants. Then they attacked the center of the line, which was in an old, deeply sunken road that gave it good protection. Finally, they attacked at the other end of the line. For each northern attack, General Lee was able to move men to where they were needed. The northern troops got within 25 meters of the Confederate line, but they could not break through anywhere.
On the first day of battle at Antietam, Lee lost 25% of his men. On the second day, the two armies faced each other without firing. They were too tired to fight. As they rested, however, fresh Union soldiers moved into position. Lee knew they would attack with full force the next day. He knew he could not win. Sadly, he ordered his men back to Virginia. It was now clear Antietam was a northern victory. It was not a complete victory. The Union Army could have chased the Confederate Army and destroyed it. But General McClellan did not do this. He was satisfied that he had stopped the invasion.
In Washington, President Lincoln welcomed the news. He had waited a long time for a northern victory. A few days after the battle, Lincoln held a special meeting with his cabinet. He talked about the Declaration on Slavery, which he had prepared. It would free Negro slaves in the rebel states of the South. "As you remember," he said, "I put the Declaration aside several weeks ago until I could issue it supported by a military victory. The action of the army against the rebels has not been exactly what I should have liked, but the rebels have been driven out of Maryland, and Pennsylvania is no longer in danger of invasion." President Lincoln said he thought the time was right to announce the Emancipation Proclamation. The cabinet made some minor changes in the document, and Lincoln signed it.
Newspapers printed the proclamation. This is what it said.
"I, Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States and Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, do hereby declare that on the first day of January, 1863, all persons held as slaves within any state then in rebellion against the United States shall then become and be forever free. The government of the United States, including the military and naval forces, will recognize and protect the freedom of such persons, and will interfere in no way with any efforts they may make for their actual freedom."
President Lincoln had tried to keep the question of slavery out of the Civil War. To him, there was just one reason for fighting: to save the Union. Nothing meant more to him than preventing the nation from splitting up. Lincoln feared that the issue of slavery would weaken the Northern war effort. Many men throughout the North would fight to save the Union. They would not fight to free the slaves. Lincoln also needed the support of the four slave states that did not leave the Union: Delaware, Kentucky, Maryland, and Missouri. He could not be sure of their support if he declared that the purpose of the war was to free the slaves. As Lincoln waited for a Union victory to announce his Emancipation Proclamation, he wrote a letter to the New York Tribune newspaper. The letter was to prepare the public for what was to come. This is what Lincoln said.
"My chief object in this struggle is to save the Union. It is not either to save or destroy slavery. If I could save the Union without freeing any slave, I would do it. And if I could save it by freeing all the slaves, I would do it. And if I could save it by freeing some and leaving others alone, I would also do that. What I do about slavery and the colored race, I do because I believe it helps to save the Union. This is how I see my official duty. It does not change my wish as a person that all men everywhere could be free."
President Lincoln failed to keep the question of slavery out of the Civil War. As the war went on, month after long month, people in the North began to see it as more than a struggle for national unity. They began to see it as a struggle for human freedom. Abolitionists were active. In speeches and writings, they said over and over again that slavery was evil. As public opinion began to change, anti-slavery members of Congress gained more power. By the summer of 1862, they had enough support to pass laws ending slavery in Washington, D.C. and United States territories. They also pushed through Congress a bill that would do much to end slavery in the states.
The bill was called the Confiscation Act. It gave the federal government the power to confiscate or seize the property of all persons who supported the Southern Rebellion. Slaves were considered property. So any slaves seized under the Act would become free immediately. Slaves who escaped from rebel slave owners also would be free. The bill would not affect slaves owned by persons who supported the Union. President Lincoln did not like the Confiscation Act. He thought it interfered with his wartime powers as commander-in-chief.
However, Lincoln was under great pressure from abolitionists, so he signed the new law. But he did not plan to enforce it. He still hoped for a plan that would free the slaves slowly, over time. He proposed such a plan, but only for the border states between North and South. Under his plan, the federal government would buy slaves in the border states and free them. Lawmakers from the border states rejected Lincoln's plan, and that is when he decided to issue the Emancipation Proclamation.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.